You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Why do you think less students are choosing to study at university?
Well, because being a student isn't sexy anymore.
The Wire.
A new UNESCO report looking at gender equality in creative industries across more than 100 countries has found significant discrepancies in the workforce. I spoke with Associate Professor of Communications at the University of Auckland, Bridget Connor, about what's driving these inequalities and what's at stake if they continue.
For those who may not know, what is the UNESCO report and what does it cover?
The UNESCO report is focused on something called the 2005 Convention on the Diversity of Cultural Expressions. That is a mouthful, but basically the 2005 Convention is like a binding legal instrument which UNESCO member states all around the world sign up to and have done so since 2005. And it basically requires all of the member states that have signed up to periodically report on all of the policy mechanisms that they are putting into place to support the diversity of cultural expressions of different kinds. So it looks at like how different nation states are working, like on cultural policy mechanisms, for example, how they are, you know, kind of funding and supporting cultural diversity in different ways. And the 2005 Convention is also really focused on particular things. For example, how culture supports human rights and fundamental freedoms, how it supports artistic freedom and artists being able to, you know, move across member states to practice their art and, you know, their kind of creative practice. And so my role in writing the most recent report has been to focus on one monitoring area, which is how member states are supporting, through cultural policy, gender equality. Right. So what different kinds of cultural policy mechanisms can we see that are supporting gender equality in the kind of making and the consumption of culture and creative goods and experiences?
There's this interesting tension that they found in the report where women make up a large percent of the workforce in the creative industries, but they're not reflected in any leadership or pay. What's driving that disconnect?
Yeah, this is such an interesting one. And this is an interesting moment in the report because since the convention was signed and ratified in 2005, that's 20 years ago, right? So we actually have 20 years of data that we can look at and reflect on in the most recent report. And yeah, this is a really interesting one. If you look back at previous versions of this report, this is quite a consistent finding that over time, if we look at, the kind of gender identity that are, of those that are making culture, that are cultural producers, creative workers, artists, that more and more identify as women over time, and obviously that's really positive. But yeah, there is still these things, sometimes people refer to them using terms like, say, glass ceiling, but you really see that although there might be kind of, gender equal participation in certain areas of the cultural sectors, that you definitely don't see gender equal leadership or, you know, kind of the in governance roles of arts and cultural organisations, for example. Those are far from gender equal. Also, another area in which you don't see gender equality is like decision-making roles, the people that are hiring and firing in different kinds of cultural sectors. Why? I mean, it's really a complicated picture and there's no like clear answer. Obviously, it really depends because this report is looking globally. So there are big differences between parts of the world or different countries. But often you're seeing, there are not policy mechanisms that are focused on gender equality. Often those are just not visible in many parts of the world. Gender equality is not considered to be a really important factor when making and setting cultural policy goals. So that's one of the recommendations of this report, that despite all the 20 years of progress, gender equality and other human rights and fundamental freedoms are not often considered to be really fundamentally important for good cultural policy making. And they should, right? And there are all kinds of mechanisms that could be put in place to kind of like, to shift those persistent barriers.
Another side of this report also mentions the increased online abuse that comes for women. How does this actually shape women's careers or participation in these creative spaces?
Something that has emerged in these reports over time, but it was really impossible not to talk about it in this most recent report. Yeah, I think it's interesting because on the one hand, you might say, well, new kinds of digital tools and, you know, kind of creative spaces or areas in which people, all kinds of creatives, could use digital tools to be more visible, to kind of circulate their work more widely, possibly monetize their work more widely if that's what they're interested in. Those digital tools might offer lots of potential benefits for creative workers. So there's potential there. However, I think, yeah, the rise of what UNESCO and others would call tech-facilitated gender-based violence is hard and impossible to ignore. And what's interesting here is the emerging evidence. Again, the evidence is patchy. It's hard to get really good data. And again, it depends where you are in the world. But the emerging findings show us that women, or the creatives that identify as women, are much more likely, when they are operating online, to face harassment, online abuse, trolling, all kinds of things like that, which then often means, you know, that kind of rather than the digital environment offering new kind of exciting creative avenues, it's kind of, again, shutting women out of these industries. It's kind of making them kind of invisible, pull back from doing the kind of work they could do online. I mean, there's also a whole other area, which is the abuse and the bias and the misogyny that is now being built into things like large language models, things like generative AI. Again, the evidence shows us that, you know, the kind of offline gender-based harms are kind of being replicated in these online spaces, and Gen AI is one of those. So we're seeing, you know, the structural biases that are already in the offline world being kind of re-inscribed within the digital and the online world. And again, like really, really concerning, some of the stats show this is kind of at epidemic proportions. So if we're already worried about the kind of gender-based barriers that are out there, I think that we should be really concerned about how these barriers are being replicated or made worse in online spaces.
You mentioned digital tools like AI. We often hear that these systems are created biased. What does that actually look like in practice?
And again, UNESCO has done some other work in this space, which we reference a little bit in the report, but there are some other reports that have come out quite recently in the last couple of years that have done more of a deep dive into large language models. So again, what UNESCO is trying to do is survey and, you know, kind of build qualitative studies where they've looked at, okay, based on the kinds of prompts that you put into particular large language models, what kind of outputs do you get? And, you know, again, these are only a few studies, so a lot more work is needed in this space. But at least those reports show they're often based on the prompts you're putting in. If you're putting in prompts in which you are referring to, you know, kind of like gender-based roles, often what the large language model will produce are kind of quite stereotypical portrayals, right, which are often based on binary, traditional, outdated gender roles. You know, those kinds of things get replicated based on the prompts you're putting in. And, you know, again, the other thing is, you know, these stereotypes are kind of replicated based on what the large language model is being fed. But the other thing that's important to note is, you know, again, it's hard to make causal links, but if we again look at the creative workforce, right, who is involved in developing large language models, again, it's hard to get really clear stats, but the tech workforce more widely is, you know, largely dominated by white men who are working in these positions. I mean, one study I cite in the report would say that one study showed that developers, 90% of them, 90 out of 100% identified as men. So if this gives us any indication about the workforce, again, I think there's a homogeneity to the tech workforce, and that is arguably having some impact in terms of what the large language models are producing, and the kinds of worldviews and positions that are represented in that workforce. So again, that it's really hard to make causal links. More research is needed, but what we can see, I think, is quite worrying in terms of, the bias and the misogyny that is being built into the architecture of large language models.
You've said Aotearoa isn't as visible in these global conversations as it could be. Why do you think that is?
Interesting question. I wonder about this. I obviously, there are limited resources, right? Especially at the moment, there is a lot happening in the world. So I guess in terms of resources, it's not necessarily always possible for Aotearoa to be, in all of these kind of global forums and part of these conversations. But I suppose, I've been travelling a fair bit for this work and this report, particularly in the last year. I've certainly found in some of these international forums, Aotearoa is not as visible or present as we could be. And I think also there is just some work that we could do to offer more visible contribution to the conversation that is centred on this 2005 convention. Aotearoa is a signatory to the 2005 convention, so we do report, right? We report back to UNESCO on the work that we're doing. But I do think there is more work we could do there. And again, that's maybe incumbent on us as researchers who are involved in this to kind of make this a bigger part of the conversation around cultural policy making here in this country. But we are doing some really amazing work, much of it, of course, founded within Te Tiriti o Waitangi. I mean, there's so much we are doing in terms of cultural diversity, and I think we could just be more involved in connecting with the 2005 Convention, connecting with other nation states that are doing this work, and I think just more loudly and proudly speaking about the work that we do. There are issues here around, I don't think that cultural policy making is funded sufficiently in this country, and I'm not the only one, I think, that would argue that. So I think there's more advocacy work we could do to put this on the agenda. And I think that work is really important in these difficult times. So it's really just about, I think being more vocal and celebrating what we do, and then kind of, just trying to ensure we are part of this broader 2005 convention conversation.
And if we think about creative industries shaping culture, what's at stake if women aren't equally represented in these spaces?
This is a great question. I think UNESCO would argue that, as I said early on, within this 2005 convention, human rights and fundamental freedoms are at the core of this work. And, this 2005 convention very clearly maps onto the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. Again, one of those goals is also relates to, all kinds of policy making work we can do to support gender equality. I think the stakes are really high, and I would say particularly at the moment the stakes are high when we are clearly seeing a wider backlash globally. The term equity, diversity and inclusion is, by some governments seem to be now a kind of a bad word. These kind of gender equity, gender diversity programs, funding to support this work is being cut in many places. This work is being defunded in universities, in creative sectors, in broader policy-making schemes. So I think the stakes are quite high. If we can see that progress has been made across the last 20 years, but I think there is a real danger, as we note in this report, that this wider culture of backlash, plus all the other concerns raised around online harms and bias, we're at a kind of a dangerous moment where if this backlash continues to take hold, we could see more and more erosion of fundamental, you know, freedoms and human rights, which we absolutely do not want to see. So I think the stakes are very high, and, you know, we really need to be focused on this, as well as a kind of a broader landscape around how we want to ensure fundamental freedoms are not erased, alongside, you know, the erosion of democratic freedoms more widely.
That was Associate Professor Bridget Connor on gender equality in creative fields.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.